You're going here.
What kind of fish have you caught?
Here?
Yeah.
Oh, we've got ahi and aku and kava kava and mahi mahi, ono, paka paka. Oh, and lots of these little, you know, shore fish. You got, there's some, we've got gray snapper. I think that's about all I can think of right now.
What are some other kinds of fish? Like, the bayo bayo?
Probably have gotten some. There's a lot of fish here that I don't know the name of, you know.
Those names, I really like to hear those names
now. Yeah, I got a friend of mine was used one of these throw nets, and so he taught me how to use it, and Jeannie got me one this Christmas, but I haven't been so busy, I haven't had a chance to do it much, you know. But it's a lot of fun to, and it's, you know, quite an art to that throw netting, and you have to sneak up on the fish, you know, you just can't walk out there and throw it. You gotta find out where the fish are and then wait for the right kind of wave to come along. And so it's, the water's boiling and the fish can't see the net, and you know they're there, and then you throw it and hope you catch something, and generally you'll catch a few. No, from the shore, you have to walk along the beach and find, you know, where the water's got to be pretty shallow, and so you can reach down in and get your net back out. That's got weights all around it, and a little pocket in the side, so that when the fish get in it, they swim off into the pocket. And it's a different kind of fishing. All its own.
How about spear fishing?
I've done a little bit, not very much, but I've speared a few fish. But I haven't used any scuba gear. I use just a snorkel and go in shallow water. It's a lot of fun, but I got a ear problem. I can't stay in the water too long. Otherwise my ear starts hurting. So I really don't do too much of that.
What's it like here in the ocean when you go out and a boat fishing? What's the ocean like? How could you describe that to someone who perhaps has never even seen an ocean?
Oh God, I don't know. big body of water. The only thing we really worry about fishing out here, you know, if it's really rough, we don't go. But if the only thing we worry about is breaking down, because if we break down, you know, and the currents all drift away, and you can drift way out and they never find you if you didn't let somebody know where you're at. So we carry a little spare motor, and we have a CB radio so we can holler for help if you break down. But and then we never go very far out, probably about 5 miles, about far out as we go.
Can you describe the boat, or the boat that you fish from here? And, you know, because most people would only be familiar with the flat-bottom boat.
Well, you know, most of the boats here are built for sea going. They're a V-bottom, and they're not like up there. Most all the boats on the rivers are all flat-bottom, but, you know, they wouldn't work out here because they just pound themselves to death on the waves. And so you have to have a boat with a, it'll take, you know, heavy waves and stuff and won't break up. And you don't have to worry about going in any shallow water. So, you know, most of the boats are made out of fiberglass, and because they don't care about the weight and how much water they draw. Or like up there, we have to, you know, try to get a boat that'll draw as least water as possible to keep from running aground or tearing up your propeller. And here, you don't worry about that because you have plenty of water. As soon as you leave the shore, it's 1,000 feet deep.
You ever had any problems with sharks or anything coming around you when you're fishing?
Yeah, we've had sharks taking away our bait and lures once in a while. They cut the line off. But, we never... You wouldn't want to jump out in the water when one's around, but we hooked onto a couple, but we never brought none in. They'd always, cut the line on us. We'd have to be on an ahi line. That you have to have a wire leader if you're going to catch a shark, because their teeth are so sharp they can just cut right through an ordinary line without even, worrying about it. We lose, lures every once in a while to sharks. And then we hook one once in a while, but we never bring them in. Some people eat them here, I guess. White tip sharks are supposed to be good to eat. But they have, along the beaches every once in a while, they have a shark coming in, so they generally warn people to stay out of the water, all the sharks around there. But everybody's scared of them, but I don't know how. I had a friend over here that used to do a lot of diving, and he said they had one shark, a big white shark, that they'd go down and feed. They'd catch fish for him and feed him. And they fed him for about, maybe a month. He was getting pretty tame. And but pretty quick, he wanted more than they could catch. And so they started getting scared of him. And so the shark would come after him every time they'd go down. If they didn't catch any fish, they were afraid they were going to get, he was going to take them. So they finally fed him a can of lye and did him in. Because he was getting so aggressive. But he told me that if you're around sharks, if you can keep facing them all the time, and if you if they come too close, you bang them on the nose, he said they won't bother you. But if you don't look at them and they come from behind you, then they'll get you. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what he claimed. But I just assume not face one.
Yeah, but I think if I was in the water, I'd want to know where he was. Yeah. Yeah. Oh boy. So you don't worry about storms or anything like that?
Not too much. We once in a while we've been out and get. See, on this Kona coast, it's not, you don't get storms like you do the rest of the island. If you get on the other side or down the channel, you got to be really careful about storms. But around Kona coast, it's very seldom get a storm in here that you can't handle. And if you do, you generally know it's coming beforehand, so you don't go out. So that's no big problem. Main problem is keeping the boat running.
You spend a lot of time
working on that. Oh yeah, that's a full-time job, keeping the boat running. So it's always something wrong.
Do you generally fish with somebody else when you go out?
Yeah, there's two or three of us go.
Mm-hmm. Does Jeannie
goes most of the time, yeah. Yeah, she likes to fish too, so she always goes.
Mm-hmm. How about hunting? Do you usually do that alone?
No, she always goes too. She likes to go. Mm-hmm. So we always hunt together. I couldn't make it without her. She takes all care of all the details of everything. And she's been doing it for so long, I probably couldn't make it on my own.
Well, what other, besides the hunting and fishing, do you, collect?
Well, we got a lot of stuff growing around here. We got a lot of papayas, macadamia nuts, and avocados, and bananas. We got all those things growing around here that we use. And then we planted a bunch of citrus fruits that should be willing. We got some grapefruit that's bearing now. And then we got oranges and tangerines, lemons and limes, all growing out here.
All in your yard?
Right around here, yeah.
Did you bring your strap? You got your strap. Mm-hmm. Why don't you walk out and have a look?
Okay.
Talk about them while we're walking.
Right,
because the sun's too
hot. Getting some of them to take, and a lot of them having failures. And this is avocado tree. This is it's just starting to bloom. It's the first year it bloomed, so probably from now on we'll have avocados on there. And it's about we planted that about four years ago.
Is that this summer? Summer pears, summer avocados?
I think they come late in the fall.
Oh.
There's one that I've just grafted, but it's I don't know if it's going to take or not.
What kind of tree is that?
That's avocado.
Oh.
How do you graft that one?
Well, you take a... you got to get a piece from a producing tree. And then you plant the seedling, and when it grows up, then you cut it off. And split the skin, and then make a wedge shape on the end of the graft, and then stick it down in there, and tie it on with raffia, and then put the grafting wax around it so the juice won't come out.
Huh? You tie it right on there.
Yeah. And then if you do everything right, it'll take, and if you don't, it'll die. I'll just take you right up to around the whole yard here.
Okay.
This coconut tree that we threw a coconut in there, and it came up so we just left.
Oh, it was just a coconut that you had and you threw it in?
Yeah, it's just when we threw a bunch back and one of them started growing.
Looks like you got a couple more coming up there too.
Yeah, here. This is coffee tree. We just planted a couple just so we have some around.
Yeah. You're a coffee drinker.
Yeah.
Are you going to roast your own beans?
Well, it's quite a complicated process.
I know. I've tried it.
This is the oldest one we got. And it's got nuts. It gets loaded with nuts. It's just coming up. It's already producing. This is a grapefruit tree here. It's got a few more things just coming. They're here. By the time we get back, they're ripe.
Yeah.
You know, so we can start in the middle of gets going, you know, a lot bigger. It didn't sit there for a long time. That's about 4 years old, that tree, but there's a pupa down there and it didn't take good. You know, the roots didn't get going good.
You've even got pineapples.
Yeah.
Not many people grow their pineapple. They're not patient enough.
And this is a banana seed. There's about three bunches on these. They won't be done until we leave. There's one bunch on there and a couple on these.
Mm-hmm.
That should be producing now too. It's got a few blossoms coming on it.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's a healthy looking papaya tree over there.
Yeah, we got this we never broke up with a cat. We just cleared it out by hand and planted these trees, and they don't grow so good. And down here we had the cat food trees that I had them just rip all the ground up. There's a fair lot over here. And the trees grew about four times as fast as they did up here. You see, that's another banana stalk coming there. That's my smokehouse there, my smoked fish.
Oh, you got your own smokehouse. Yeah. Hey, Kurt, there's this Hawaiian smokehouse.
Yeah. Smoked marlin.
See, I'd like to take a look at that.
Yeah. See what I did? I put the fire down here so that it doesn't get too hot. Yeah, I cold smoke it. Most people hot smoke. Yeah, I put the fire in here.
That's great. And then, made a
and then
stone.
Put the the racks up there and the smoke goes up, so you get lots of smoke and it doesn't get too hot. We use, you know, just wood on it. Use chiavi or guava wood. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what's damaging you.
Chiavi, yeah. That's great.
Yeah, I used to have it over there and it was shorter, but then it got too hot and it was too close to that tree, so I just moved it this year. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fill it in a little bit more. It's starting to rain.
Yeah. What do you think about working with the lava rocks?
Well, there's plenty of them.
Yeah. Wow, that's why it's great. But, you built it out of that.
I built that wall up there where I put that garage. And I put that up last year. Maybe we better keep that up out of there. But anyway, see, our lot goes down there. We bought two lots.
Oh.
We just bought that one about 3 years ago, and we just used it for planting. And, I got two mother trees growing down in there. And I'll show you one I thought of the chicken before.
So after you travel all around different places, what sort of different places did you go to before? I mean, you said that you'd seen different parts of the world and then I decided on Hawaii. What different parts did you look at?
Well, we went all over. We went to Mexico, we went to South America, the Caribbean, Canary Islands. We were down, well, we didn't stay very long. We were in Fiji and Africa, and India, Japan. Even went to Russia and through some Scandinavian countries, you know, Europe, Italy. We've been around to quite a few places. And, you know, we didn't like any place that we'd been as good as this place. Except maybe Africa. Rhodesia, we were in Rhodesia. It was pretty nice there. It had, you know, lots of things we like, you know, like a lot of animals and good climate. But bad political. And of course, now it's all gone to pot. But at that time when we were there, it was still a pretty stable place. But, you know, we always had in mind looking for a place to go where it was warm. And, like Mexico is a foreign country, and we had some friends went down there and bought some land, and they were going to, you know, build themselves up a place there. And they had it 2 or 3 years, and the government came along and took it all away from them, gave them their money back, but they didn't make nothing on it. And so then they had to move out. And one of them, he came over here. He was lived here for a while, but he moved back to the Washington here last year. But that's just an example of why we didn't want to, plus the fact that it's, you know, the climates are not as good as it is here in any of these other places. There's either too hot or too cold or too rainy or something, you know. And so we felt this was a place right here.
So what did this area look like when you moved here?
It was, you know, all, there was no house. There was, I think there was, how many houses was there here, Gene? About 4 or 5?
There were 4 houses down here.
It was, you know, just like living out in the woods when we first moved here.
Ben came over and said, "Oh, I'm so glad to see someone after moving down here." And then years later, she said,
"But it just grew up so fast, you know, and then there was no stoplight downtown. You could stop along the road and talk to somebody, and nobody got excited if they blocked the road for 10 minutes, you know.
It seemed like Alaska, but, really.
But now, it's just like a city. Yeah, and everybody knew everybody, you know. It's just a small place. And it grew so fast here that I don't know. It's kind of unbelievable how fast it grew. About as fast as Fairbanks, you know. But when we first came here, it was just such a nice little town, and nobody got excited, you know. It was just like living out in the woods.
When you look around at how quickly it changed, you know, do you ever think that that might happen in some places, some other places in Alaska?
Oh, yeah, it's bound to. Well, it's just like Fairbanks, you know, it changed so drastically in the last few years. You know, just in about the last 10 years, it changed really, really a lot. It turned from a small place into a city. And you don't know anybody anymore. You go downtown and don't know. If you see somebody you know, it's a miracle, you know. And it used to be you knew about everybody who was on the street.
Why do you think those changes have happened?
Too many people. They got to have a place to go, and they're all looking for the same thing, so they find a good place and they go there. And everybody's got the same idea. So there you end up right back where you started, you know. It's just a never-ending cycle. But I think that's the whole thing. It's just there's just getting to be too many people. And they're all looking for the same thing, a place where there's not many people, and those places are getting hard to find. Any place that has some good conditions, they're going to move there, you know. They find out about it, they're going to move. Hell, there's all kinds of people here that are from Alaska. They have a picnic down here every year, and they invite all the Alaskan people. And we didn't go to it because it's, I don't know, we were gone someplace the last couple of years, but there's about 200 people show up at this picnic that are living in this area from Alaska. And most of them are the same. There's some of them have retired and stay here year-round, but a lot of them just come down here for, you know, 3 or 4 months in the winter and then go back. Just the same as we do.
Did you find any difficulties when you were first trying to do that, first trying to have two homes?
Yeah, we still have. Well, there's a lot of different problems, but one problem is you can't have any pets because you have to leave them, so you can't bring any into Hawaii, a dog or a cat or anything like that, because they'll be in quarantine for 6 months. And so they'd be in quarantine all the while you're here if you brought them from there. So you have to, you know, find somebody that'll take care of them if you have them. And that's one of the problems. And then, of course, you know, you have to have somebody live in your house. And sometimes you get people to take care of it, and sometimes you get people that don't. And so if they don't take care of it, you know, it costs you more than if you'd have just locked it up. But you don't dare do that because somebody would come in and clean you out, you know, if you did, take everything you got. And especially in Alaska, you got to keep the heat on. You can close it up, but it's not good for a house to leave it empty in the winter because it frosts up. And if you have a water softener or anything like that, you have to drain it or take it out. And of course, you have to drain all your plumbing. And this house we got up there now, we designed to do that, but after it came time to do it, we found we couldn't close it down. It'd be just too big a problem. Plus, you know, we had a couple of pets that we couldn't leave, cat and dog, you know, but we don't have a dog now anymore, but we still have a cat up there. But he don't pay much attention because he could care less, you know, about people. But a dog is kind of hard to leave behind. And like if we had one here, we just have to go off and leave him, so we never, every once in a while a stray will come along here and Gene will say, God, we keep him, that's a nice dog, you know, but you can't do it. In fact, just about our grandson lived with us here for most of this winter. He just went back to Alaska and he brought a little dog home the other day. said he found him, and Gigi wanted to keep him so bad. And I said, no, can't do it. So we had to haul him back up the hill and dump him off where he found him.
What's your grandpa's name?
His name is Brookshot. He's my daughter's son. And he lived with us last summer in Fairbanks and then came down here. He's going to live up there again this summer with us. But he likes this hunting and fishing business too, you know, so he fits right in with the operation. He's, I think right now he's 11 years or 12 years old. But he likes the, we take him up on the Yukon and he really gets with the fish cutting business.
So. Yeah, well, that's just perfect age, geez. Most kids that age probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
Well, you're leaving tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where are you going from here tomorrow?
Well, we're going to Seattle. And we have to tend to some business there, and then we're going to go and visit Jeannie's folks for about a week in New York. And then be back in Fairbanks probably about the 15th of April. And then I'll have to go back to work. So we can do it again.
You get there just in time to file your taxes.
Yeah, that's what we got to do in Seattle. Yeah. It's getting tough, I'll tell you. You can't make any money. The government takes it all away from you.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the end of the year, you think, gee, I'm doing pretty good, you know. And then tax time rolls around, and you figure out, God, you should have saved a little more to pay the taxes.
Yeah. Working out a year to pay your taxes.
Yeah.
Do you find that changing the climate between Alaska and here is bothers you at all?
No. It gets kind of, when you go back when it's cold and miserable, it takes a little getting used to, but coming the other way is no problem at all. We have a little problem getting sunburned when we first come back, you know. Always go to the beach or something, and the first couple of days we have to be careful, because otherwise we get sunburned pretty bad. But after you get a little bit of a tan, it doesn't bother you so much.
Well, did you discover that there were things that, say, growing up in Alaska and living there, you just accepted as that's just the way the world was, and then you came here to live, and all of a sudden discovered that, well, maybe you didn't like those things after all. Or
well, to a certain point, yeah. Of course, when you're up there, you always expected you're going to have to put up with all the cold of the winter. You know, that's just the way it was, so it really, you prepared for it and didn't worry too much about it. But now, when you see that 40 and 50 below weather coming, you think, God damn it, it looks awful good over there in Kona. I think we better go. And actually, you know, it's the way we live, it's cheaper for us to live here through the winter than it is up there. Because we don't have no fuel bills, you know, you never, our biggest expense over here is gasoline, I guess, because we raise most everything we, you know, we use, and we bring with us moose meat and salmon, you know, quite a bunch enough to last us for the year. Clams, because we're always, you know, digging that stuff up in Alaska and getting it ready. So we can up a bunch of moose and salmon, and then we bring some frozen. And hell, we never buy any meat at all over here. Just with what we bring and what we catch on the mountain or what we fish we catch, we got, you know, more than enough meat and fish to live on. And then we, around here, you know, everybody has extra stuff and they're always bringing something, you know, for out of the garden. They bring, you know, like fresh vegetables and fruits and stuff. If you don't have, divide them out. And so, you know, we don't really buy that much stuff over here. And, you know, like if we take a bunch of bananas down, we split it all up and because they ripen so fast, you know, once you get them, that you can't use them. So you give the neighbors, and if they have one coming, then they bring you some, you know. And then we trade, you know, a lot of stuff, like we give somebody some kippered salmon, and they give us back a bunch of avocados or fresh vegetables or something like that. So it works out pretty good.
You find people get along pretty well then around here?
And oh yeah, there are people, you know, that live here, you know. Actually, they're just like the Alaskan people, you know, the people that have been here a long time. They're all friendly and they all want to get along. Seems like the only problems you have is some people that move in and they want to bring their customs from wherever they came from and try to convert you to living with their customs, you have a problem. But the way people live here is pretty much the same as they live in Alaska, you know, basically. And they're the same type of people, you know.
What kind of things do you think are the same? What sorts of things take you on?
Well, you know, just the way they, you know, the way they live and the customs and everything are basically the same. You know, like we have friends up here that are, this Jimmy Matsumoto, Japanese, and his wife is a Chinese. And if they have a Chinese New Year dinner or something like that, you know, they invite everybody up. And it's just like going to a Potlatchian Minto or someplace. You know, they have all kinds of food and the native type foods and stuff, and plus all other kind of stuff, you know, and it's just a big get together and everybody has a good time. And, you know, just things like that are the same. You know, like you go catch fish, you divide it out amongst your neighbors, and if they'd catch some you don't, they'd give you some. And we do the same thing up there, you know. It's just a little different conditions, you know, climate and weather and the way you do things are just a little different, but basically they're the same, you know.
Does it seem like that's changing around here?
Yeah. It's just, you know, small groups that do that yet. You know, there's some, like you get downtown and it's just like moving into a city again, you know. You don't know anybody and people are, they don't say hello or nothing when you meet them on the street. They just look at you like, what are you doing here, you know. And where it used to be, everybody you met, you know, it's even if you didn't know them, you know, they were friendly. And it's getting to the point now where they're not, you know, they're not friendly like they used to be. Or the same people are, but, you know, there's so many new people coming in and they don't do that. That's what, just like they do in a big city, you know, you live all your life and don't know who your neighbor is. And it's getting that way, even like in this subdivision. We used to know everybody here, but now we don't hardly know anybody. But we just have the, you know, our own friends around, and we always visit back and forth, but you don't get, you know, acquainted with these other new people coming in like we used to. Used when we first moved, one, you know, guy'd move in here and start doing some work. Well, everybody'd come all around and help him, you know, get started. If he needed help pouring a driveway or something like that, you know, he just let him know, and then everybody'd come and help him. And now, you know, I don't see much of that anymore. Because I think it's mainly because there's too many people, you know. And they just don't have the same atmosphere that there used to be. And it's the same up there, same in Alaska, the same way. Even in the smaller towns, you know, like Nenana, where I grew up most of the time, I go down there and I might know one or two people out of everybody I see. They're all new, different people in there. The only place you see the same ones are in those, you know, most of the isolated villages, like, well, even Minto's getting people in there that you don't even know, you know. that you get in most of the villages, and the people are the same people that have been there, and they haven't changed much. Mainly because there's nothing for anybody else to do if they did come there, you know. But this place here is mainly because of the climate and everything. It's growing really fast, too fast. They're building new hotels. And they're still down here building two more big hotels they just started on. I think they'll have 600 rooms, hotel, two of them. And that'll bring in a lot more people, you know. So I don't know. If it gets where there's a traffic light on every stop, maybe we'll be moving back to last and permanent. Or well, find another place.
It seems like tourism is one of the biggest forces in Kona.
Yeah.
Is that right?
In all of Hawaii it is, yeah. Yeah, Kona's really dependent on the tourists. But see, now that since this recession and everything started, the tourists are down 20% on this island last 2 months. And so it's hurting the businesses. But the thing that's made this grow so much is mainly people, retired people moving in here, you know, and building up houses and stuff. And then the property just gone out of sight. It's in the last 2 years, it's doubled in price, all the property. Place that you could buy for, a lot you could buy for $15,000 just 3 years ago. Now it's worth $50,000. Just a little bitty 10,000 square foot lot. Mm-hmm. You know, with nothing on it. So I don't know what's going to come of it.
So, how about the people that say that people's kids that are now 20, 25 or so, something like that, and want to find a place to live?
You got a tough time. Pretty impossible. And that's one of the big problems here is these young people got no place to, no way to get a house. They can't, there's no way they can afford it. Unless they have folks or somebody that's got lots of money and wants to buy them one. If they're starting out working, it's impossible right now for to buy a house or build one just on wages. Just flat impossible.
Something like that might be difficult for people in the villages to understand that there's some of the land available and
yeah.
You can't go out and cut trees and build your own house.
Yeah, it's Well, actually, it's getting that bad in Alaska, too, because they got so many controls, you know. You have to get permit to get a cut of Christmas tree, you know. And then the stumpage is so high. I guess they still have a few areas you can do it, but unless it's a corporation, you know, village corporation owns the land, you have to go get a permit from the BLM or the state. And then they got to designate whether you can do it or not. In a lot of cases, they won't let you.
Mm-hmm. But, I guess they'll charge you too.
Yeah, and then they charge you stumpage and stuff. But you know, up there you can still do it. Probably you can still build your own house if you want to. Log cabin or something, but you can't go out in the woods and do it. Because they control all the land there now. Either the federal or the state. And you can't build anything on federal land. So even, you know, in Alaska, if somebody wanted to go out into the woods and build a place to live, they can't do it. Unless it's some area that the state opened up for homesteading or something. And most of that is the worst land the state's got. They want to get rid of their worst land first. And then, then they can probably get the better land later. But everybody's so hungry for a piece of land, they're grabbing anything.
Yeah, and even around villages, there's not that much land available, and people feel crowded too. Yeah. Oh, there's similarity, yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to get into Alaska. I'm going to ask about fruits a little bit. One question. You know, when we walked around, you pointed out banana and papaya and macadamia nut and coconut and things like that. Are those your favorite fruits?
Well, they're good, but I don't know if they're favorite now, but they all grow good here. The main reason, but they are, yeah, they're all good to eat. I think, you know, like we like oranges and tangerines really good. And all of it, you know, it's all different stuff, but it's all good. But you have a variety of everything, and then some things are producing at one time and some at another time. And so if you have all these different things, you always got something growing, you know, something ready to use once it gets going. Plus, it's a, you know, it's a kind of a, gives us something to do too, you know, taking care of all this stuff and planting it. And it's interesting. We like to do it. So, because there's lots of people, you know, they have a place and they won't grow even one kind of a producing tree or fruit or anything. They just aren't interested in it. And it seems like a waste of good ground and everything else, you know, because it's there for the taking. All you have to do is put it in, get it started.
Seems like everything that you planted is a useful plant in some way.
Well, we got lots of, you know, flowers and bushes and stuff around here that are for ornamental stuff, but everything that I plant is something to eat. Jeannie puts the trimmings around.
Well, how did you learn about grafting?
Well, I just this Jimmy Matsumoto up here showed me how to do it. He grafted this tree back here, a couple of them, and then he showed me how. And then I, you know, asked different people about this and that and how to do things, and then just kind of pick it up. And it's just like everything else. So there's tricks and art to it, and you have 50 failures for every successful one until you learn how, I guess. But I like to, you know, experiment with it, so I do it different ways to see how it's going to work.
Yeah, I tried grafting citrus trees one time. I tried in Samoa. I grafted some citrus trees together, and they didn't work out, though. Mm-hmm. It was just too bad.
There's one guy up here that's got a citrus that he's developed that grows a orange, a grapefruit, and I think it's a lemon or a lime, all on the same tree.
Different branches.
Yeah, just different spots he puts it in.
That's pretty handy.
Well, what about that pineapple you have growing out there? Are you gonna miss it? Looks like it'll be
ripe. Oh, yeah, we won't get it. No, it takes 2 years to make pineapple. Yeah, but we got a lot coming, see? We got a lot more down below. So maybe when we come back, there'll be some other ones ready. But we generally, you know, get a few of them when we come back from time to time. But see, if we don't use it, somebody else will use it. And maybe some neighbors got too many one time and they give it to them. So it's just a trade-off, you know.
Mm-hmm. So is somebody going to be staying in this house while you're gone?
Yeah. There's a guy named Bud Abbott and his wife are going to stay here. He used to run a charter boat down here, but he's in real estate business now. But she works for a nursery up here on the hill. So she's really into this planting and stuff, and she does a lot of grafting. So she told me she, if any of my graftings died, she'd redo it for me. While I'm gone, so keep coming.
You might ask her to practice a little bit too.
Yeah.
Well, what do you see as the future then of living here in Hawaii? For you say you probably keep going back and forth.
Well, there's the only future for us here is a good place to spend the winter, you know, to get out of the cold and the snow. And we'll probably just keep on doing as long as we can, you know, as long as we can get back and forth. See, another thing that makes it good for us is like we have with the air service, we get passes on some of the airline. So it doesn't cost us anything to get back and forth. So that's another, you know, reason that we can move back and forth so easy.
You ever think about starting an air service here?
I did once already. I bought a Kona flight service down here about 4 years ago and started running it. But every time we'd leave and let somebody else take care of it, it'd go downhill again, you know, by the time we came back. And so we finally decided it wasn't feasible. And I had enough to worry about taking care of the one up there. Then I'd come down here and work the rest of it just as hard to try to build it back up, and then it'd go downhill again. And we had a pretty good tour going around the island here, and charter service started, and we had a flight school, the whole work. But so we decided, well, it wasn't feasible, so we sold it last year.
Yeah, that's a real disadvantage living in two places.
Yeah.